This hour of Overdrive is powered by FanDuel. FanDuel, bringing you everything from the opening line to the final score.
All right, here we go. Overdrive off and running. TSN 1050 on the TSN app, your home smart speaker, and up on TSN 2. Brian Hayes, your dog, Jeff O'Neill, Jamie Noodles McLennan. How are we feeling? How's everyone doing?
How are you feeling,
today,
pal? How's my guy doing? You good?
I'm always good. I'm always the same. Always good. You don't have to worry about me. Are you good? Everyone good? Everyone's happy today? Everyone's
good.
In the mood? Very what are we thinking?
I'm in the mood. Somebody said you should call him Hazy K instead of Hazy B, and I said don't even think about
don't
that.
Don't even go there.
No?
That's my guy, and we're done with that garbage.
Well, it's out there now. I mean, we're 30 seconds in. It's out there now. You might as well explain it. You got to explain what you're talking about.
Now, Berkey called you by accident, Kevin, yesterday, and you were bent out of shape about it, and it's over with. I'm not going there again.
We
goof on stuff, and we milk it for weeks. But that one, as a buddy, I'm done with it, and we're cutting the cord with it. And after the Hazy K comment, it's over with.
That's it. We're packing that shop up and moving on. Okay. I'll believe that when I see it.
Yeah,
I'm
not buying it either. And the fact that you know, you doubled down. We could have let it slide. There was a double down halfway through the interview when he said, actually, you could ask Kevin about that, where I was like, oh, like, not necessary at all, which was, I'll use your verbiage. Was there gutless involved? The word gutless? Is that
I know, what Jamie, that was the NHL hockey player in me where it's just part of our blood.
That.
When you just can't go there, we go there. Hazy, you're the same way, Hazy.
No, I do it all the time.
I can't complain.
I can't complain. Believe me, when the tables are turned, you can bank on it.
Believe me.
I'm going to floor it. It's going to happen.
Exactly.
But
you have to know
that Hayes is a hockey name, and he thought he just got Hayes, Kevin Hayes, and he said Kevin.
Well,
he wasn't.
I've interviewed him
a million times. I know, but so is Sam Mitchell.
Sammy has no idea. Yeah, exactly.
No, he calls you Dave.
That's right.
Yeah. Here's the thing that I will say this, though. In fairness, 2 days earlier, you put a clinic on in Oakdale.
Oakdale. We don't want to mess that one up where they're all weak.
Yeah, sorry. Oakdale. And you let him know that this guy was in the weeds all day, and you were flying high that day. I will say that.
There was a high and low that game. Yeah, that's true. Now, I never really dug that up any further because I was going to let it slide, right? I was going to let it slide.
Fair enough. There was a
Now the door's open.
Yeah,
here's the thing. I beat him for the first time ever, but instead of him just finishing the round, now he's going to hold that over me forever and say, well, I didn't finish.
I didn't. I quit golf after 9.
Well, yeah, I guess you could say. I mean, you played all the way up until 17-tee, which is fine, but I had you, right? But now I can't fully say I beat you outright because you'll just say, well, I decided I'm not playing.
Quit.
So,
yeah.
Exactly. So, does it really count? You know, does it mean I actually beat you?
Well, I know you like to play Thursdays. Did you back it up today?
No. I was out there. It's so hot. I mean, that's such an excuse. But
it's so hot.
Still not good.
I got caught doing the most Bush League thing in life. It's sweltering, and I went and visited a friend of mine out in Kitchener and played a course called Deer Ridge. So it's sweltering hot, okay? And I take my golf shoes off, and I can just see steam coming off my golf shoes, okay? And I said to myself, how bad's a golf shoe smell after a round of golf in that weather? I grab it. I basically turn it into a mask and just take a sniff, and I hear, how'd you like the Corso, dog? And I'm like, this guy comes over the top turnbuckle, couldn't see him, and I got the shoe right to the snout, and I'm just like, why did that guy come out of nowhere and say, how'd you like the course, oh dog?
Was it your buddy, or was it a random
No,
person?
I didn't know the guy. I didn't know the guy.
I see. Yeah,
so
that's
got
a
random
impression.
Guy, a random guy,
a random
who recognizes
guy,
you.
Yeah, and I got the golf shoe just saying, how bad does this golf shoe smell right now? Anyway, moving on. But
so
Hazy, no good today?
You're the soccer coach, basically. You're
fine,
the soccer coach that sniffs his armpit, that you're sniffing your shoe afterwards.
Yeah, I was
what was
coach.
The guy, that guy?
That guy's name. That's the German head coach. What?
Yeah, I can't remember his name, but
Yogi Low or something like that.
Yeah, dude,
that
Yogi
guy
Low.
Is disgusting, the stuff that he was going everywhere, and he didn't have any problem. Because you said it, Hayes, that coach, there's no way he's going to do it again because all cameras are on him. He went right back to the well.
He
doubled
was,
down.
Like, it was a tick, but worse than that because, like, how obscene it was. And we're talking World Cup final. There's a billion people watching around
right.
the world.
And
in
he
every
went
language.
Front, back, all over.
Every this guy was in every possible orifice and deep. Like, this guy was deep in a lot of different places. And, okay, you know, you're going to do that. That's one thing. But then to wrap up with a sniff, like, to check out what's happening there.
And he tried to be discreet, too. He started with, like, an eyebrow scratch, and then the fingers just went right down. And he said, I got
to
do it.
Yeah, he had to. He had. Yeah. I don't know if that was, like, him, you know, decompressing, if that was his way of trying to relax. I don't know what it was, but it was absolutely obscene. And I'll tell you what, those soccer coaches, like, have you guys seen this Jose Mourinho, who's been around forever, and he's the he's the manager for Roma, who just lost in the Europa League final in penalties, and I think he got, like, his consolation prize medal. He threw it. This is the head coach. He just chucked it. Like, remember that Russian player did that at the World Juniors?
No, Swedish.
It was a Swedish guy.
Swedish player.
Silver medal, right?
Right
over the.
I think multiple nations have possibly had players do
You're
that.
Right. There might be a couple of different guys.
I think so. So Mourinho did that, and then he went looking for the ref afterwards, like down by the buses, and was calling him a crook and was yelling at him, and there's tape of this guy. This is a manager who's been around forever. He's won everything. And they run differently in the soccer world. They run very, very differently. And I think his explanation was, well, I got to protect my guys. That seems a little bit rich.
Protect my guys. I always love when the manager says that, especially in baseball. It's like, I got to run out there and basically throw spit in the umpire's face and act like I'm a lunatic to protect my guy. Do they think the guys are in the dugout saying, that's our skip? Like, we love the guy for doing, like, what does it do?
No kidding. On, like, a strike zone call or a slide into second base.
Hasn't Boone been tossed, like, four or five times this year already, hasn't he?
He got tossed in Toronto. They were winning 6-0.
Yeah, and he says he doesn't care. He's going to keep doing it.
Yeah, I guess that's his M.O. That's his thing.
But, I mean, where are you guys at, like, talking about baseball, because I was tuning in. Like, do you think that was close to a quality start? Not good
for
enough?
Manoa?
Was it?
For I
Manoa,
don't think
four,
so, man.
Right? Well, was it two earned runs, though, wasn't it?
Like, yeah, that's
the guy's supposed to be your stud, and he just barely gets the four. Give me a break, man. That's outrageous.
The problem. I think the body language afterwards and how vulnerable he looked, how really he's in a dark place.
Yeah,
I feel for the guy. Right. I feel for the guy because, you know, last year was such a positive season for Alek Manoa, and he also put his stake in the ground, right? He's chirping with the Yankees, chirping with the Sox. Goes to the All-Star game, gets mic'd up, boom, he's the king of the All-Star game. What a fun guy, throwing heat, challenging guys. And now, like, he is really in a bad place.
Yeah, and if you want to take baby steps and say, okay, maybe it wasn't that bad, go ahead and take that route. But I think, as Pat Quinn says, that's a loser's race, and I don't know. I mean, you can take that one. You can say maybe it was a step in the right direction. But I really don't know what the hell that's going to get you. That you just said it. That's a dark place, and that's it.
Well,
he's throwing way too many pitches. He's getting in way too many jams. He got out of a couple of jams, and you're right. He gave up two earned, but it was a home run, right? He walked guys early in the second. He puts guys on via walk. He's got no. He said it afterwards. He's like, I'm overthinking everything, and I'm trying not to throw a ball a certain place as opposed to saying I'm throwing it here to get a strike. And it's in his head. It's all confidence. He completely
lacks
it.
You see some, like,
right
curveballs where it's just like, you could see him where he's like, I hope this is a strike.
Yeah.
Like, it leaves his arm and he's like, God, I hope, like, kind of guiding it in there. It's just like, you are going to get pounded in that league doing that, man. Pounded.
It's so evident. You guys mentioned body language, okay? So a pitcher, there's nowhere to hide. Camera's on you. You are on the mound and you're delivering the ball. It's like a goaltender in hockey. that looks tiny. They shrink. How many times have we said, like, you know, Jack Campbell, when he started the season in Edmonton, like, you were almost afraid to watch him get puck shot on him because it was, he looked small in the net. He looked unsure of himself. Body language and confidence is so big in pro sports. Manoah is, you know, he's 6'6", 280 pounds. Like, he's a commanding presence, but he doesn't look like he's owning it up there. Like, he does look like he's struggling.
Well,
same thing,
no,
I can tell.
Hazy was bringing up Yankee Stadium, him challenging guys, wanting to fight, saying, right, chew on that. He is so far away from even thinking that. It's in a different stratosphere.
Yeah, I think the way he's going about his business in the dugout as well. We're showing it up on TSN 2, him sitting there talking with Schneider. That is an athlete that is trying to talk himself, you know, to a point where he's trying to explain himself to people. You can,
right,
tell he feels like the whole world is watching him. And that's effectively what's happening. And that's what happens in sports when you're a standalone player. When you're,
yeah,
a pitcher, you're a goalie, you're a quarterback, you're on your own. And, yeah, and the expectations are incredibly high. And what you have to bring to the table is incredibly important. And if you don't bring it, your whole team is going to suffer. It is a pressure-packed situation. Noodles, you would know it, being,
yeah,
a goalie in this situation. And him walking into the dugout, talking to Schneider, you know, he's talking to Kirk. He's going up and finding Walker. Like, it's like he's trying to find a shoulder to lean on, but it almost felt like he was trying to explain himself.
Yeah,
you know,
it's like the guy at a party that does something stupid and he's trying to gather friends and say, it wasn't that bad, was it?
Right.
You know what I mean?
Exactly.
Yes.
Exactly. But that's the truth. Like, that's,
yes,
you know, hey, there's, I'm getting there, or, oh, I just can't do this, or it's just not going my way, or, and it, you know, and it's probably falling on deaf ears because these guys are all like, hey, man, I'm watching the game and we got to grind out of the mess you've kind of created here. So,
yeah,
let's talk afterwards. But really tough. And then what they needed today was exactly what they got. Gausman goes out there and does it again. You know, throws 115 pitches today. Goes 6 2/3, 11 strikeouts. They get a win. They take 2 or 3 against the Brewers after 2 or 3 against Minnesota.
Right.
And now they go down to New York. They're playing the Mets tomorrow. He got Bassett back in New York up against his former team. And Verlander's going to be on the mound. But, like, where would this team be without Kevin Gausman? Right? Like,
right,
where would they be without him on short rest? The bullpen gets overworked basically whenever Manoah's on the mound. This is such an impressive run for Gausman, where it feels like every time he's on the mound, it's like Schneider is probably pleading with him, you got to give me an outing. You got to,
yeah,
throw 100-plus pitches. You got to get into the sixth, seventh inning. And he does it basically every time out. Like, he's been phenomenal, and he was amazing again today.
And you can throw in two other guys, too, Bichette and Chapman.
That's
they
right.
They are the only, like, consistent,
yep,
performers, really, from, you know, day one. I know that there's been bumps, but, I mean, Bichette
in particular,
yeah,
incredible.
Exactly.
That's his 12th home run. He's the best player on the team, like,
yeah,
bar none. The team is, in terms of bats, it runs through him basically every single night, and he did it again tonight.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll catch up with Scott Mitchell this hour, get his take on all of this, what he saw today, what he heard out of Manoah last night. We got Brad Treliving coming up at 5:30.
Yeah,
it was a soap opera today, man. Like, Treliving's going up at 11, and like 20 minutes before it gets announced, Dubas is on his way to Pittsburgh.
Do you think that was 100% calculated by Pittsburgh?
Absolutely, I believe that. And you know what? I love it. I love it from their standpoint. Do I think it's petty? Of course. But they're playing to their own crowd. They don't care about the Leafs. Or Treliving, and it was a classic, like, soap opera, Vince McMahon type,
yeah,
move. Like, we're just gonna drop this right in your lap,
I
right
get
before
it
you bring
too,
up
Hazy,
your new boy.
And I thought it was petty, but guess what? First game, Pitt Toronto, the whole hockey world's gonna want to watch it. It's just like that little stuff that we all talk about content. Like, Pitt Toronto's a must watch. It always is with the players that are involved. But tune in; it'll be dialed up. Days leading up to it, it kind of charges it up a little bit.
I love it. I love the play. This is entertainment, right?
Yeah.
It's entertainment, and that's – could Dubas have stopped it? Of course he could have. Of course he could have. He could have said, guys, do it at 1:30. Make the announcement at 8 a.m., and then we're coming out at noon. 20 minutes before, 20 minutes before Treliving goes up. He knew it. The Penguins knew it, and – you know, listen, I'm guessing there's bad blood. I'm guessing there's bad blood.
Well,
I'm guessing Kyle Dubas doesn't want to see the Leafs succeed in any fashion, and so be it.
I think there's bad blood between probably him and Brendan Shanahan. But although Brendan Shanahan had some nice things to say about him, he said the
classy
lines today. Yeah, classy. Went, you know, you take the high road in a situation too. You know, it was pointed out today too. Like in Kyle's speech a couple Mondays ago, he was saying it's the Maple Leafs or nowhere else, and it's my family and this and that. All of a sudden, he's surfaced 2 weeks later with a new organization, and it's his right, and he's taking his family down to Pittsburgh, and he's got a new opportunity.
And if you can't connect the dots on why there was a new ask, I mean, figure your life out.
Yeah.
Because when there's something in your back pocket, because all the conversations I've had with people, they come up and they say, man, that's pretty crazy that Kyle Dubas would risk going back with a different number and different responsibilities and things. And I say, why do you think someone would ever do that? Because it's out there somewhere if they want it. That's why you ask for it. If you don't get it, it's still out there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's no other way to explain it.
It's very clear cut. This job was his months ago.
Right.
And they were back channeling. He's got an agent. I mean, that's the impression I'm taking. And I think most people would take it the same way.
Right. No one working in the NHL would leave themselves unemployed with multi-million-dollar, multi-year offer out there unless there's something bigger planned. And that's why you go at it with a different offer.
Yeah.
Like it's dot the I's is not that hard.
And I think Shanahan and the Leafs sniffed that out. They knew exactly what was going on, and they said, all right, you know, it's kind of like with Kawhi and Masai and the Raps, you know, different context with it being a player. But by all accounts, Kawhi kept coming back saying, if you get Paul George, if you do this, if you give me that, and eventually Masai was like, you don't really want to be here. You want to go to L.A.? Just go. We're not going to play your game anymore. See you later. Yeah. We're out. And, you know, Dubas, because the reports have been out there for months that Pittsburgh had their eye on him, that he had maybe had his eye on Pitt or was possibly – you know, you don't get let go and then immediately, you know, that's available to you. You're down there meeting with Sid a week ago. This was always coming. And I'll tell you what, if Spezza ends up there in the next 48 hours or whatever, then he knew about it the second he resigned. The second that Dubas is going somewhere else and he's going to tag along. And I'm not saying that's a bad play. But
no,
like anyone naive enough to think that Dubas was solely focused on the Leafs. And then, oh, that went awry. Oh, my God, Pitt's available? I can't believe it. Come on.
I mean, no, you're right.
And he got a bump. Now he's the president of Hockey Ops.
Pitt's available. Oh, my God.
I don't blame him, though. Like,
no.
He's got more power, probably more money down there in Pitt. I don't love the setup in terms of what's
as
up with
I just
team.
Mentioned, dot the I's, asking for more power and more money.
Yes.
There's, like, figure it out.
Got it somewhere else.
But you know what? Good on him. Like, at the end of the day, you know, I don't know if you guys laid eyes on Tree Living's presser. Like, I've said this all along. There's other good GMs out there. There's other good people out there. And, you know, you hope and you know, you see that Brad Tree Living, I thought he did a really good job today. And I think he's an affable guy and he's a good GM. And the Leafs found themselves a good one. And Kyle Dubas is a good one. And he moves on. Like, that's life, you know.
Yeah.
And it's ultimately, you know, we all knew that Tree Living wasn't going to say much today as far as, you know, status of the coach or whatever, but I thought he said the right things as to, hey, you know, from the outside lens, this group looks like, you know, it's got potential to win. All of the right things he said. Like, now we'll see what he does.
Jamie, he also said, which is very true, that it's so difficult to win. And if you look at the situation Bill Zito was in right now, you need a lot of things to go your way, and there's probably some luck involved. He was probably 2 days away from getting let go from the Florida Panthers for making a big-time risk that just didn't work out, and they didn't qualify for the playoffs. Now he's a genius because he took that chance and got Matthew Tkachuk, and Matthew Tkachuk's unreal in the playoffs. Like, the difference of that and him possibly being let go, I don't know if that would have happened, but you would have to think ownership was saying, look, man, you made a drastic change here when we missed the playoffs after winning the President's Trophy. Maybe take a lap. That would have been out there as a possibility. So it's so difficult, and the timing and the stars have to align. Obviously, everyone's got quality players, and they have to play well, but it's only one team left standing where everybody looks like geniuses.
Well, and Brian Burke admitted on our show yesterday that Florida doesn't make the playoffs if his team didn't crap the bed. That's his words, not ours. Like, mm-hmm. he flat out said that. Like, that is the truth, and Tree Living pointed to that today. You know, Florida got 92 points, and they got into the playoffs because of a Pittsburgh Penguins loss to the Chicago Blackhawks on the last day of the season. It is opportunity. It's a thin margin. That doesn't change anything. That being said, that doesn't change anything. You got to focus on your group and your group getting past now the first round, second round, whatever's needed here, because, again, windows. This is the window. This is the window of Austin Matthews and Mitch Marner and William Nylander, and the window's closing on John Tavares, who'll be 33.
The core four, right? The core four. And Tree Living came in, and yeah. Why don't we play the clip? All right. Sure. Here's Brad Tree Living when he was asked about the core four, and here was how he responded to that.
I want to stress strongly, I'm not about coming in and making a statement, right? You can throw a body under the tarmac, and it might look good for a headline, but Are you getting any better? At the end of the day, it's about getting better. And just being different doesn't necessarily make you better. The other thing I'll say on that is, and again, this, I'm coming in from an outside lens. You know, this idea of the core four and all those types of things, my job is to protect them, right? It's to protect them. And I'm first fiercely protective of my players. But this can't be about the core four. This is about the Toronto Maple Leafs. It's not about four players, not about two, it's not about one. It's about the 23 guys that we're going to have in this organization.
But you're not opposed to a big
league. We will look at all things.
So here's the thing I want to ask him, okay? Because he did say we're going to look at all things. And that is totally reasonable. I think that's a smart play to come in here and try to effectively abolish a lot of the terminology and a lot of, you know, what was connected to the Dubas era, and even prior to that, Lamoriello, because these guys were here even when Lou was here, Tavares notwithstanding, but he got here the first year Dubas got here. But if those four players are here, how can you – you're not going to change the way the market feels and the way the market looks at those four players.
And that's probably connected to ultimately results too, Brian. What do you expect? Some drastic things going to change come spring next year?
Well, and that's
why would you?
Yeah, so, like, I get where Brad is coming from, but that I felt like was a message to the, you know, the media and the fans almost as well. Like, let's get away from a core four thing. Let's get to a Leaf thing. That's just not going to happen if those four guys are all in the lineup opening night. Like, it just, it's not. Everyone is attracted to those four players. The whole program has been built around those four, catering to them, protecting them. You know, right. And basically rolling the dice and saying we believe they can drag us there. And it hasn't happened.
Well, so let me ask you, let me paint a picture for this, because I've been thinking about this too. Because you're right, the core four, it's almost, and we've been saying it too. If they come back, then what's different? What's different from Kyle Dubas? What's different from Brendan Shanahan? Especially if Keefe, by all accounts, it looks like he's going to be back.
Door was open anyway, right, for possible change,
right,
there.
But so let's just say the band comes back as far as those four. Would it be different if there is a major move that changes your defense or your goaltending? Does that change your thought process? Like,
I was just going to mention, Jamie, the whole idea of the team and philosophy being different, the view from the fan base, and it's such a big ask, it's almost impossible. If you had some giant ads, like, let's say, you know, if the goaltending was so drastically different, like a Hellebuck type of name came in, that would get people's attention where it's like, wow, now we finally got a stuff. I don't see that happening without one of the other guys going out the door.
Exactly.
Like, they'd have no room or no ability to make an ad like that or make a drastic change without one of the other guys leaving.
Right. That's the truth. And I guess that's a core question that I came out of, you know, this morning was looking ahead. If the Leafs have success, and it's – and again, this won't matter. The fans will not care necessarily. But in terms of Tree Living, you know, his legacy here, what he's trying to build. If you come back with those four players, Morgan Rielly, Sheldon Keefe, and they finally break through and have success, will this be Brad Tree Living's team or will it be Kyle Dubas' team?
Well, I would say it's Brad Tree Living, is because it's where the people that he surrounds them with. Because if he does build a team that has a stronger defensive situation as far as defense and bigger guys, all of that, or a goaltender that takes it, unless it's Joseph Woll that was drafted by Kyle Dubas. But yeah, the four is still there, but he's got a lot of work to do around that four. And that would be the argument as to, I think it's Brad Treliving's team if he adds to that core four or changes the look a little bit of it.
Right, he has to change a lot, but I would say Dubas at the deadline did that, right? Like Dubas, I thought, had a phenomenal trade deadline. I'll never change my mind on that. But he had a great trade deadline. And, you know, so I guess it's different. You can't answer the question today, obviously.
Right.
And you're right, Noodles, if – you know, Samsonov goes, they get rid of Murray, they bring in a new goalie who stands on his head, and they bring in three new defensemen. Okay, then it looks different. You got a different third line, fourth line, or whatever.
Right.
But, you know, if there's going to be a lot of consistency in terms of the main pieces, then – but at the same time, you could argue Dubas was handed these players too.
Right.
He wasn't the GM when Matthews, Marner, Nylander, Riley got here. Tavares fell on his lap day one of the job, you know, so – you know, there's a lot of different ways that maybe you can review it. I'm just saying it's going to have to be a lot of change to feel different if the main pieces are still here. Take one guy out, then it's Brad Treliving's team immediately. I guess that's what I'm getting to.
Okay,
one core four piece leaves, now this is Treliving's team. But if the main players are still here, I think that'll be difficult to maybe argue that. Brad Treliving coming up in about an hour. Jays winning this afternoon 3-1 over Milwaukee. They're heading down to New York. Three-game set against the Mets starting tomorrow night. Scott Mitchell in just over half an hour. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on TSN 2. All right, Scott Mitchell will join us in about a half an hour. Get his take on the Jays' win today. And we'll also catch up with Brad Treliving in about an hour. Kyle Dubas was announced to the media down in Pitt. And a big shooter with Fenway. There was a mispronunciation of Kyle's last name. You want to play it? Let's play
it.
Yeah,
we got to play it.
Because this one stinks, man. You can't bring in the new king of your team. This guy's running the show, right? You just went through contract negotiations. You've met with him multiple times. And the guy's name's Tom Werner. He's a big shooter with Fenway that, you know, they own Pitt and they own the Penguins. And here's how he introduced Kyle Dubas earlier this afternoon.
It's our pleasure today to introduce you all to Kyle Dubas, the Penguins president of hockey operations.
I like his bag of notes there, too. It's like they were crumpled up in a knapsack, and he just wheeled them out. Like, come on. It's
right.
Amateur
like,
hour.
Like, where did
man.
This guy come from? Here, give me a cue card. What the hell is this guy's name?
Yeah.
You know, who did we just hire?
Yeah.
Kyle Dubas.
Yeah, that's
okay.
Tough.
It's a tough start, man.
Yeah, it is.
It's always a tough start. Like, the guy's the new president of hockey ops. Come on.
Yeah.
Scott Mitchell will join us in about a half an hour. Jay's getting past the Brewers today. Brad Treliving in an hour. But we got longtime NHLer on the line, former head coach in Ottawa, of course. He was an assistant coach here with the Leafs for a number of years. And he's coming back on Overdrive. It's been a while. Here's Paul McLean. How you doing, Paul?
I'm good. Hazy, how are you guys doing today?
You're doing very well.
Having a lot of fun, aren't you?
We're trying to. Yeah, we think it's imperative you get a name right, isn't it? Like,
yeah,
McLean's
well, I
not
thought
tough.
You need a nickname. I was listening to that earlier. I was like, you just need a nickname, man.
Yeah, you're right.
That's what it is.
You're right. Kevin.
You got Old Dog and Noodles, so you got to get yourself a nickname.
It's Hazy K. That's my new nickname. I don't know if you're aware of that, but it's been established.
Well, I heard about that today, but I'm not sure I like that one. But
no, I'm with you, Paul.
Yeah, all I know is whatever they start calling you, that's what they're going to call you.
That's right. That's the nature
right.
of the room, isn't it? Dressing
that's
room
exactly.
politics.
Yeah. That's exactly right.
So, yeah, we're really glad to have you on. I mean, obviously, you've been a lifer in the game. You were working with the Leafs for a long time up until, you know, about a year ago. And I'm curious what you make of all the turnover. Does it feel like a lot of turnover considering, you know, the coaching staff still relatively intact and players are still here and – you know, what do you make of Brad Treliving coming in?
Well, I think Brad's been around the league a long time. I think he's going to do a great job, and I think his experience and where he's been in the league, I think, is a good thing for the Leafs. I mean, Kyle leaving, I think I wasn't sure about that one myself. I thought that the job that he's done to get the Maple Leafs to where they are now has been outstanding, I felt. But the game changes, and when you don't get the results, that's the way it is. Unfortunately, today's game, players don't learn as fast as we would like them to learn, and as coaches or as managers, and sometimes one person leaving is better than 20, and that happens a lot.
That's true. Paul, you mentioned you've been around the game a long time. You were with the Leafs, and you watched some of the progression of this, we'll call it core, continue mm-hmm. to grow, continue to get better. What do you see, you know, how good they've become, and what would it take for them to get over the hump and get into, you know, multiple rounds or, you know, Stanley Cup contention type of thing?
Well, to me, over the years, I go back to when I was trying to beat the Oilers all the time, and we always tried to outscore our problems, and the Oilers tried to outscore their problems, and they run into the Islanders, who checked them to death. And like every team that goes on, the Red Wings I was with from 06 to 08 and 09, we come out of the lockout 06 with the President's Trophy. We lose to Edmonton in six games, and the best players, Zetterberg, Datsyuk, and Nick Lidstrom, are like, enough is enough. Right? So when the best players say enough's enough, and they develop that passion that it takes to not outscore your problems and not try to take, it'll be okay. No, it's not okay. They need to develop that passion that we're going to defend, and we have to win 2-1. Even those old Oiler teams used to beat the Jets 7-6 with a one goal game, but when they ended up beating the Islanders, it was 2-1. It was 3-2. And those are the types of games that you have to play with lots of passion, and you have to learn that passion, and it's got to get spurred on you one way or the other. The coach can only do so much. At the end of the day, you look at the Florida Panthers and what they're doing now. They had the President's Trophy last year. They make a couple of changes with Tkachuk, obviously a big one coming in, and now they find a little spark and they get going and get things. So it doesn't take much. I mean, in 08, we won the cup in Detroit. Dallas Drake was a guy that Ken Holland brought in. All of a sudden, everybody wanted to play for Dallas and wanted to, you know, do well for him. And it really helped the team. So you never know what it's going to be. But at the end of the day, it's the best players have to recognize that enough is enough. We're not going to take this anymore, and we're just going to win.
So I totally agree with you there, Paul. But how much time and how many more opportunities can you give the same group of people? Like, how the question I guess is, how long can you wait for the group of players that have been there the longest, and we all know who we're talking about here? Like, how long can you wait for them to actually get to that point where they say, okay, enough's enough? Like, what if enough's enough's not in their kind of personalities?
Well, I guess that's what you find out. Maybe it's not. And if and if it's
but
not,
wouldn't you
then
already know it right now?
I think that learning takes time, and then everybody learns at a quicker rate or a different rate than everybody else does. And I think there's still plenty of time and lots of runway for the Leafs with the group that they have, but they have to spark it from inside that they enough is enough. And maybe they can bring one more guy in, maybe moving someone out and bringing someone in would make it. But it doesn't need to be, I don't think, a major change. Maybe just changing Kyle is going to be enough to say, oh my God, he was a good guy. He treated me good. We got to do something here. I mean, that could be enough to spur them. And usually doesn't take much to get it going the right way. But as you said, they need to do it now. Like they can't wait. It's not the learning, the learning curve it is what it is. But at this point in time, they should be ready to take that next step. And that's what the expectation that I would have them going into training camp is, that they're going to be ready to take it all on.
We're chatting with longtime NHLer, head coach, and former assistant coach here in Toronto, Paul McLean. Assuming Sheldon Keefe is going to return as the head coach, and that appears to be the case as of now, obviously anything is possible, but what kind of role can he have in that? And, you know, how would you expect him to approach possibly going into a new season with the same core if that ends up developing? Like, how different can your message really be year over year as a head coach?
Well, I don't think his message needs to be different from Sheldon to not just to those four players, but to the whole team. Like, the whole team has to develop the attitude that they're going to be enough is enough, not just those four guys. Those four guys have to lead it, but they need lots of help, and also the coach has to help them along and make sure that he holds them to the standard that they're going to accept at the start of the year. What is going to be good enough, and then hold them to it on a daily basis in practice and in games, and pushing them to make sure that they get to that standard that they're talking about, and then push them to get beyond it. So I don't think his job has changed this year from last year. You don't want to be a head coach of the team and be changing, going back and forth about what needs to be done. You really want to be very consistent year to year as to what your expectations are and where your level of expectation can certainly rise, but your attitude and approach to the team should be consistent, and Sheldon has been that since he's been there. He's been a very consistent coach with his message.
Paul, a lot of conversations we've had, especially on this show, about goaltending and what level of goaltending you do need. Obviously, you only notice it when you don't have goaltending. What I mean by that is, you look at Vegas, Aiden Hill, who was probably arguably, fourth on the depth chart. He gets an opportunity, but then you've got Bobrovsky, a $10 million goaltender. Is it just the way that your team's built and the way that you defend as far as your level of comfort in net, or did you always like to have a guy that was, you know, like a Hasek type, or some, were you fine with somebody who was just a quality goaltender, but maybe not a top tier goaltender to go deep in the playoffs?
Well, I always like my guy to be better than the other guy.
In my own opinion. Good strategy.
Yeah.
In my own opinion, I would like my guy to be better than their guy. And if I don't think my guy is better than their guy, then the rest of us better help him be better than that guy. And I think that's a big part about goaltending. You don't always have to have, it's always good, Vasilevsky, and the way Bobrovsky's playing is obviously, it's a big part of the game, of the playoff game, is the goaltending, and it's a huge part of it. But there's also been, you know, teams and good teams win Stanley Cups by their team play and their 5-on-5 play, and that all comes in with the goaltender and defense and forward. So you can win it without having the best goaltender, but it sure is nice to look down there and see one there.
Paul, you said something early on in the interview where you said it takes players longer to get it and understand it. What happened in the transition of the game where, when we played, it was kind of go out there and do this, it's non-negotiable, or you don't play, to we'll give you all this time to try to figure out what you want to do?
I think we can blame that on the internet. We blame everything else on it. I'm not exactly sure where it went. I remember going to training camps and getting it beat into your head. You got to get the puck out on the wall or you can't play in the league. And,
no kidding.
You know, that kind of stuff. And my first practice at training camp of the St. Louis Blues, 1978, I know that's a long time ago, 2 hours, no pucks, no nets. Like, who really wants to be here? Barkley Plager. So, I mean, those days are a little bit barbaric, and we don't really need to go back to those. But, I mean, players play in the league sooner. I mean, a lot of guys in the past had to play in the American League for quite a while. Now, with the salary cap and whatnot, guys play in the league sooner. Especially a lot of the better players play in the league sooner. And I'm not sure that they learn that process of how to get themselves prepared for that big game the right way by being able to do it in the American Hockey League, or even back in the old IHL days was another. Those lessons that you learn, I know I played a year in the Central Hockey League, and it helped me a lot the next year when I played with the Winnipeg Jets as far as preparing myself and getting ready to play. All those old-timers had a lot of old stories. They'd tell you how to use your stick to protect yourself, make sure you just follow through in your pass. You don't have to do anything with it, but just have your stick there so nobody can hit you in the head, right? So all those little things that they could teach you, I think they miss out on those, because when you get to the National Hockey League, it's showtime, and then we put lots of pressure on them to succeed and be good and put them in places to be good. And I think that has a little bit to do with that we kind of hurry them on a little bit.
Well, working in this market, and you were here during a very unique, strange era because of COVID, where, you know, the media wasn't even in the room, fans weren't in the building. But a lot is made about, you know, being in Toronto and the amount of attention and the pressure and all that. Being around the likes of Matthews and Marner and Nylander, what was your impression of how they were handling being Maple Leafs and how comfortable they were with that?
Well, they seem to be very comfortable. And now today's players live in, compared to like when we played, O-Dog, they live in a little bit of a bubble. Mm-hmm. I mean, they can go to the rink without seeing the fans. They fly in a plane without seeing the fans. They get down the bus, go to the rink. So they can be in a little bit of a bubble. But I think that they don't always. I think today's player doesn't always listen to the fans. Like they don't always listen to your show or read the newspaper. Or I mean, the Toronto Star and the Globe are always, the Toronto Sun, they're always in the dressing room every day. Everybody was reading it, so you're aware of what's going on, not only with your team or about yourself or around the league. And I think today's players, they don't get that. I mean, social media is obviously different, but I'm not sure how plugged in they are to everything that goes on around the city or about them even. But so I think that's kind of where they maybe could learn a little bit more about the game and about themselves by allowing themselves to be touched a little bit.
Yeah, that's an interesting thought. And it feels like that's been the mandate of the Maple Leafs, talking the hierarchy, like protect, mm-hmm. protect, bubble, bubble, bubble.
Right.
Don't give anything. Don't say anything.
Yeah.
And, here they are where maybe they don't know. Like, I don't know. And maybe it wouldn't affect them one way or the other. Maybe it wouldn't help them one way or the other. But it seems like something that is a viable option to try, allow people in a little more or show yourself a little bit more.
Well, yeah, I always put a little bit more in it when I knew somebody wasn't happy with me.
Right.
Find a fan base was out there, and the writer comes in and writes a story about you, and you read it the next day with your kids at breakfast, and you're going like, hey, Dad, what's going on with that? And you go, well, I'm going to fix that.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So it's... maybe they don't see that. Maybe they don't hear that stuff. They get themselves, in, like I said, in that little bit of a bubble, and none of that stuff reaches them. And, those are things I think help motivate me as a player going to different places and flying into Toronto with Howard Chuck, and he's saying, hey, Grandma's coming to the game tonight. Let's make sure we're ready to go. And, so you're ready to go because Grandma's going to the game.
Right. Of course.
Those were little things that were motivators that got you going when, maybe going into that game wasn't a big game, but it's a big game because Grandma's going. But then the next time you had to go to a big game, you were getting prepared for it. So it was a process every day of learning how to be a responsible and a strong player on your team is something that you have to learn from every day.
Well, Paul, it's been great catching up with you. Enjoy yourself, throughout the Cup Final. My understanding is you're out in the East Coast, so enjoy the weather out there. Hopefully it's hot like it is here in Toronto. And we appreciate you doing this, and we'll do it again down the road. Thank you.
All right, thanks, guys, anytime. Thanks for having me on, and fun listening to you.
You got it. Thank you. There he is, Paul MacLean. Yeah, it's an interesting dynamic, that it is. There's so many opinions now. There's so many, and in a weird way, you might be able to actually filter through it easier today, because Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, papers, right. TV. There's so much that maybe it just becomes one kind of distant noise, as opposed to focus like that's me on the front page of the paper in 1978.
Right.
Obviously, I'm going to pick it up and read it. And I also think the way the Leafs operate is. It feels like it's like a counterbalance. Yeah, don't worry about them. We think you're great. We think you're amazing. So does that allow the Leafs to be hard on these guys? Because, then they feel like, well, now they're getting it from both ends, and that's not going to be a good thing. We got to protect these guys. We got to shelter everybody because it's so crazy in Toronto.
And part of me thinks that some of these modern-day players where they're like their own little company. Like, they just walk in and they want the pictures for Instagram and the suits and the hats. And it's like they're really into themselves. A lot of them are. And it's about themselves, and they want to throw some money in the bank, and they deserve that. And it's different that way. So the idea of them being into themselves so much, maybe they just go home and they're like, I don't really care what any paper says, and I'm just going to enjoy my life and live my life. But there's also a part of me that thinks just the human reaction to it, you would have to just take a peek and say, what did that guy say?
Yeah, like, you're right.
You would have to take a peek. Just curiosity alone and the human element of it, you would want to look and sniff around.
Sure.
One thing that Brad Tree Living said to me on the presser today that stood out for me was he said, like, you got to get away from the individuals. This is about the Toronto Maple Leafs, like the brand. Like, it, to me, I think that's the way he likes to run his company and his organization. Like, yeah, you
it's
can so, talk
it's,
about
it's
Mitch,
very true,
Mitch
Jamie,
Marner
but it's always about the players. Because guess what the first thing he has to do? He's got to go see Austin
gotta
Matthews.
Go fly and see Matthews.
I get it. Yep. I get it. But it's the brand. You got to, you know. We'll talk about it later.
All right. Overdrive continues, brought to you by FanDuel, bringing you everything from the opening line to the final score. Brad Tree living in about 40 minutes. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on the TSN app. The Raptors still no coach. Everyone else is hiring. Raptors just trying to figure out what they're going to do. Sounds like it could happen in the next couple of days. But Nick Nurse was introduced down in Philly. He's already getting grilled. Like, he'll realize quickly, man. He will realize quickly how good, and I think he knows how good he had it in Toronto, but Toronto's got this rep of, you know, the media goes wild, they're crazy, they're ruthless. Wait till you get to Philly, right?
Oh, like,
they are going to be all over him. All over him immediately. He hasn't done anything. He's a great coach, and they're all over him. Do you want Harden back? Do you want Harden back? Answer the question. It's like, whoa, he's not the GM, you know?
Yeah.
And but if you're getting paid, which he is – like Monty Williams down in Detroit. Monty's all good, man. This
Jesus,
guy,
man. He got $80 million deal.
6 years, $78.5 million for Monty Williams.
How much of Detroit tax is that, though?
That's a lot of Detroit tax. A lot of Detroit tax. All right, more on that with Jack later this afternoon. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on the TSN app.
You've been listening to Overdrive, powered by FanDuel. FanDuel, bringing you everything from the opening line to the final score.